Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
I'm George Chen.
I'm Parker Romaine, and you're listening to SupDoc, where we talk to our interesting friends from the entertainment world who share their favorite documentaries and how they connect to it.
We've dedicated this entire month to only discussing and dissecting music docs with our great guests for Rocktober.
Today, we talk with actor, musician, and improv comedian Tawny Newsome about Jonathan Demme's classic Stop Making Sense, the 1984 concert film featuring a live performance by Talking Heads.
You may have seen Tawny on Bajillion Dollar Properties or heard her as a frequent contributor on improv podcasts Comedy Bang Bang and Spontaneation with Paul F. Tompkins.
Her album with John Langford, Four Lost Souls, just came out on Bloodshot Records.
And now here's her talk with Tawny.
We are here with Tawny Newsome. Thanks for joining us, Tawny.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yeah, nice to have you in our house. And we've been talking about this for a little bit. I know that you actually wanted to do the Wilco doc, and then we figured out that's impossible to find right now.
Which I had no idea. I feel like when I watched it, I guess I don't know where I watched it.
It was on DVD. I think the company that made it went out of business. So then I don't know. It's probably because there's like... They became so huge.
Yeah,
like
maybe they didn't want it out there.
The rights might be kind of an issue. We don't really know, but...
I was also living in Chicago, so maybe it was just like, you know, that thing was lying around on
on the stools. On the street.
Yeah, you could pick it up anywhere.
Held up by a couple of sausages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We should ask you about how you ended up from Chicago here to L.A.
Oh, you know, just followed the trail of acting work. Once I had been in Chicago for 15 years, and I started doing, after the Second City, I was on the resident stage there, and I toured with them. Then I started doing like a little bit of the on-camera work that we actually have in that city, but unfortunately, it's all like ambulance-related, so...
Explain that a little bit.
Well, think about all the shows that shoot in Chicago.
Oh,
Chicago
right.
PD, yeah, Chicago yeah. Fire, there used to be one called Crisis.
John Hamm was on one of those, right?
Was he?
No, but maybe I'm wrong about what city it was, but it was some kind of ambulance show. Yeah.
I don't even know. I mean, yeah, and then there's like the medical ones, and then so I was on like Crisis, Fire, and then I did one called Sirens, which was actually a comedy that was really great that was on USA, but it got canceled.
I remember
so
that. Yeah.
Do you remember Sirens?
Yeah,
it was great. So yeah, I either like got killed off of the shows or the show got canceled. Uh-huh, so I was right. like, I can't just keep chasing these ambulances.
Literally chasing.
Literally.
Were these like reality reenactment shows
scripted.
Or just scripted shows?
Scripted shows. Like Chicago Fire is like.
Because we had trauma here in San Francisco. That's what all of the local Bay Area actors were on for a while.
I don't remember that. You were around when Nash Bridges was shooting in San Francisco. I remember there was always Nash Bridges shoots happening.
You could see the yellow Ferrari like parked and then like a lot of trailers, which denotes a camera, a shoot of some, you know, trauma was the big one. And then,
just keeping people employed.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's probably similar in Chicago the way it is to San Francisco, where it's like they have a ton of artists.
Yeah.
But then there's still that thing of like, it's not LA or New York. So there's a little bit of like a push in addition to a pull.
Yeah, because there's not on camera work. There's a ton of theater work. I made a living as a theater artist with no day job for 5 years. Like, it's totally possible because it's a, you know, it's an affordable city to live in. Mm-hmm. There's enough union stage work that like you can have health insurance and live like a small middle class life and be totally happy. The problem was I wanted to like be on television and do comedy. Comedy's the other thing. Like we I did the Second City there, and that's sort of like the highest paying stage comedy job. And once you've done it, like you have to kind of retire after 3 or 4 years.
And so. Like super prestigious thing to it, be involved yeah. in. Yeah.
It was pretty cool. It was definitely like a weird cult, you know, that I'll always belong to.
Yeah. And did you do stand up as well? Did you do stand up?
No, stand up, just improv.
So you started as an improv person, and then you said you're in the touring company with Second City?
Yeah. The touring company is kind of like their minor leagues before they're like grooming you for the resident stage.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So you hit the ceiling of what you could do with Second City?
Yeah. Like I could have stayed to do, like they still do lots of shows and like kind of satellite like regional things, mm-hmm. and I could have kept doing that, but it would have been sort of like more of a lateral move as mm-hmm. a, you know, it, speaking in the grossest way possible, like this is the least artistic way to talk about it, like it's all really good, fun, amazing Dude, work.
We live in lateral moves, right? Yeah. This is everything has been, it's like SF to LA for us. It's like, well, the opportunities are the same, so yeah, it's yeah. not been
yeah. I think it was mainly just that I changed. I was on stage for so many years, I was like, I'm kind of tired of pounding my, you know, feet into the boards 8 shows a week.
And with Second City shows, those are like primarily scripted off of like they're sketches that are kind of get passed down, right?
There's well, some older yeah. sketches so that like get passed down. The way that like with the touring company, mm-hmm. you have what's called archive material, which mm-hmm. is like things that were written by Steve Carell or Tina Fey, and mm-hmm. then you get to perform those in addition to a very limited amount that you write yourself. Usually, like seasonally, like we'll write our own holiday shows, or you know, if we have some kind of corporate thing, you write specific things for like a corporate party. And then when you join the resident stage, you are completely scripting your 2-act show. And that's 70% sketch, 30% improv usually mm-hmm. in a 2-hour show.
Character stuff. And,
yeah. We're pretty loose. You know, we're not like as dogmatic as Groundlings, and we're not as like game focused as UCB. We're kind of a hybrid of all of it. So you can do super character driven stuff. You can do super gamey, you know, improv forms. It's whatever the show kind of mm-hmm. needs.
Can you kind of just drop in at that Second City down on Hollywood? Like the can you just like kind of like show up and get stage time with
you
those
know
guys?
You'd think so, but the first time I moved here, I had to pay for a ticket. I walked up to the box office and I was feeling really, I was like really high horse. Like I just, we call it retiring, right? Uh-huh. From the stage. Like, I just retired, had a huge party.
Right. You have your medallion or whatever. Right? Like, well, no, here's my medallion.
The president of the company buys you like a gift. I had this like $500 bag that he buys you. It's like, it's a crazy corporation. It really mm-hmm. is. We have a CEO, not an artistic director, you know? Right. So it's like you leave the, it's like I have my gold watch basically. And I walk in and I'm like, hello, I'm here to see a show.
And what are you like? 22 or something, or 20.
Yeah, no, this was like 2 years ago. I just got here, and they were like, "Oh, are you a student?"
Yeah, right.
I was like, "You're like, my picture's on the wall.
I could Don't teach you know all these classes."
Yeah. That's my face real... up next to the venison steak.
Yeah, exactly. It was a real reality check. I was like, okay, here's my $10.
But LA seems to have been working out pretty well for you. It seems like you've got a lot of your bajillion-dollar properties.
Yep, I got a new cult with them, mm-hmm. you know, a new little coven of weirdos, so that's
and
good.
And which you used to be able to find it on, I guess, by the time this airs, you're going to have to find it on iTunes or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know if the remnants of CISO are still floating around the internet or something. Yeah. But yeah, it's on iTunes, the first 3 seasons.
Did Paul Tompkins create that show, or is he...
No, Kulap Vilaysok created it. Paul F. is a dear friend of hers and now ours, and so she hired him to play that role.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And awesome. And you, like you said, you were on these other ambulance chasing shows.
Uh-huh.
So I think when we got we talked to your publicist, she's like, you know, she did a record. She does music with John Langford. I'm like, from the Mekons?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? And it's like, so you have this bizarre overlap of the Chicago, like kind of. Is that your kind of vibe? Is kind of the alt country-ish world?
Yeah, I've been singing with John for like 6 or 8 years, I guess, on mm-hmm. and off. And yeah, that Bloodshot Records crew of, sort of alt country rootsy people.
Yeah.
Robbie Folks, I've sung with a bunch of times. Yeah, and then it's just like a really cool community of like indie country musicians.
Did those guys ever come see you at Second City? Would they?
Oh,
come
yeah.
Is there a lot of huge overlap with for those guys?
Huge, yeah. So, yeah. Like, Robbie comes to every show. Robbie was coming to the shows, and before I knew him, I think I met him through Second City, and then uh-huh. I was like, hey, we're kind of label mates because I sing with John. And then John, I would have him come to Second City and play music for us to improvise off
really?
Of. Yeah, it was a fun way for me to like blend both worlds.
Do you guys? Oh yeah, like yeah. If I know there's a format out here of like ASCAT where it's like a storyteller who does improv. Like I would imagine that guy has a ton of stories.
Oh yeah, he never shuts up.
Yeah, yeah.
when we play shows, sometimes the preamble in our other band, whenever John and I play, we kind of assemble a different group of people, so we have like a lot of different.
So the band is the two of you.
Well, it's like he is himself, and then what he does is he goes, I want to make a record that's like this, and so he grabs from his pool of willing participants, and it's usually me, this violinist Gene Cook, bassist Alan Dowdy, who is a bassist for Jesus Jones, and so, because we're all kind of Chicago-based. So our last band, Skull Orchard, which we released two albums on together, Alan and I, the bassist, Alan and I used to look at the set list, and we'd be like, okay, this show looks like it's only 10 songs long, but the preamble for Luxury, the preamble for Book of Your Life, etc., like these are going to take so long because he has cool stories, but sometimes you're just like, yo, we're on a festival slot and we got to get out of here.
We got to play. Okay, we're going to end on Sun 7. That's
yeah, fine. Right? no time. We're ending on this weird ballad.
Paco, are you a Mekons fan at all? Do you ever check out the Mekons?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, a little bit.
Saw them at the Starry Plow, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago.
Oh,
but
cool.
I really love those really early records when they're just these weird art punks and like Leeds or whatever.
Mm-hmm. They've so sort weird. Of got, have you heard Ancient and Modern?
I think, is it the early 80s one?
No. It's a year and a half ago.
Oh, no, I haven't heard that one then.
I would encourage you to listen if you like their early stuff, because I feel like they kind of came back to it in a more adult way, sort of. And they recorded it out in Joshua Tree.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
oh,
it's really cool.
So, are you getting to perform music? I know you guys just made this other album.
Yeah.
But you get to do much live shows with that? Well, or is it tied up with all your other acting work and stuff?
I mean, it sort of does take a back seat to acting, but with this album, we really wanted to tour behind it, especially because this group is a foursome that is led by me, John, and then my longtime collaborator, Bethany Thomas, and then a guitarist who is new to me, John Szymanski. So the four of us make the Four Lost Souls, and John, Bethany, and I sing we share the lead burden in an interesting way. We kind of trade vocals around. Different people sing lead on different songs.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I heard the record and yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
So we really, it was important to us to all be together to tour.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And so that record just came out this year in the spring.
September 22nd.
Oh, no, it's coming out now. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe you guys recorded at Muscle Shoals?
Mm-hmm.
That was the other thing that I think we had an overlap. We had Howard Kremer on.
Oh, right.
And he loves Muscle Shoals. That was this documentary he wanted to talk about. Even though he's like, I'm mostly a hip-hop guy, but I also wanted to talk about this thing. So, yeah, we learned a little bit about that. Did you watch Muscle Shoals as well?
I did. I watched it before I knew we were doing the album there.
Okay.
I think I'd watched it like right when it came out, and then maybe a month later, John called me, and he was like, I love, so I run into Norbert Putnam and he wants to do an album, so we're gonna go down to Muscle Shoals. I was like, what?
Wow.
That's so cool.
That's awesome. So you recorded there as well. And that's
yeah, with David Hood and Randy McCormick, and
this is the Swampers guys, right? So not with Rick Hall, like he's the other studio, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Rick runs Fame and he was a nice guy. We met him. He had a party one night. It's so casual there.
Okay, what is it? Like, you went to Rickall's party? Was it at his place?
No, it was at Fame.
Oh, it was at the studio?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've been in there. Wow.
Yeah, it was really cool. I took a bunch of pictures I don't know if I'm supposed to have, but it was like a very... Because I guess you can take a tour. So I considered signing up for a tour because when John and Norbert, our producer, decided to do the album there, they asked David Hood where he wanted to record. Uh-huh. And David Hood was like, I play in Fame a lot. Like, it'd be nice to play in one of the newer studios in town. So we recorded with this guy, Jimmy Nutt, down at his studio. And so I was like, oh, I'm not going to get to, like, see the inside of Fame. I'm going to go, like, take a tour. And then one night we finished recording at, like, I mean, we would stop tracking every day at, like, 5:30 so that people could get to the bar. And so I'd be like, we're going to be here all night, right? And they're like, no. We're going to the wine bar across the street.
The pacing of that town seems like no one's like, you don't want to bust ass till, like, 2 a.m. Yeah.
No, but you get there at, like, 10 a.m. You're definitely wrapped tracking by 5, and then you go have a drink and you talk about what you did. But yeah, one night, I guess whenever bands come down there, the rest of the musicians will have little like events and they'll kind of welcome you to come to their thing. So yeah, we went over to Fame. They were like, oh, there's just like a casual party. And it was basically just like all these Shoals players, like young, new players, old guys, wow, just standing around with red solo cups, just like standing around the Wurlitzer that, like, you know, Respect was recorded on or whatever. And you're like, yeah, what is happening?
Yeah. And they're like, there's a lady here. And
yeah,
like, there's two ladies here. What's going on?
Who are you?
That's awesome.
That is cool.
Have you ever been to Motown in Detroit?
Yes.
I wonder if it has a similar vibe.
You know, I just got back actually from Detroit. This is my third time in the Motown Museum because I love going to it because I love hearing the stories.
Yeah.
I have a real conflicted feeling about the whole Berry Gordy situation, so I give them my money a little begrudgingly. But standing inside that recording room, inside Studio A, is like, it's really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's amazing how tiny it is.
It's so small.
It's so incredibly small. And then you see pictures of all those bands, James Jameson, you know, all these people,
mm-hmm,
like famous musicians just, you know, standing, and you're like, how did you get everybody into this tiny ass place?
And all the horns and like,
yeah,
I'm such a nerd. I'm like, man, they didn't really make earplugs very well back then. So how do these people protect their hearing?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, mm-hmm, you'd have to duck every time the trombone was playing, you know, every time you took a,
yeah,
solo, you'd have to duck out of the way. Something that is one of the, like, when I first went to CBGB's in New York, I was also floored by like just how tiny that place was, because in your mind anything historic just seems gigantic, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you from Chicago or are you from?
No, I'm from Northern California, kind of,
oh, really?
Near San Francisco.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Vacaville?
Oh, yeah. The Woos.
Yeah. Oh, my God. The Woos.
The giant maze. I never went. I just remember hearing ads for the Woos growing up. I'm like, what?
Oh,
what's up with the Woos?
I went. Paco, do you ever go?
Never been to the Woos.
Oh, because it was by the time you came, you came to the Bay in like 97, so you wouldn't, mm-hmm, have heard about the Woos. I did a show in Vacaville, actually. I'm pretty sure it was Vacaville. Like at some kind of a sports bar.
Really?
Some comedy show that like Matt Gibbs here was putting together. He's like, look, I'm going to book this show. I'm going to send a bunch of comics up there. I'm not going. Like, I do not want to be the host of a comedy show at a sports bar in Vacaville.
You don't.
It was rough.
Well, they just got the Empress Theater. They just got that going again.
Oh, did they? Oh,
I don't even know what that is.
That's like this historic theater downtown that they redeveloped, and now they're putting on comedy shows and showing movies and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's cool.
You still have family there? Or?
I do still have family there.
How often do you go up to the VAC?
Now that I'm here, because I was
the
in...
Vodka.
The VACA. The VACA, the V-Deuce. Now that I'm here, because I was in Chicago so long, I was so far from them. So now I go up like once a month, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, nice. I go up a lot. We usually go to Napa, though, when I go.
Oh, yeah. I'm well, like, we
let's
should...
go drink.
That makes
you
sense.
You should hit up some of... Oh, yeah, there's a bunch of... well, I was going to say, we were like stand-ups, so I don't know exactly for like you if there's like gigs to get, like, we know all the stand-up gigs, but
yeah, there's
about,
not
like,
really like an improv scene.
Right.
Or maybe
did you ever
is,
do
just...
stand-up in Chicago?
Mm-mm, none.
There's so
no,
much.
Just improv.
There's so,
there really
ever,
is.
Did you ever feel the urge, or you were just happy doing sketch and improv?
No, yeah, I really like improv. I really like ensemble work. So stand-up was always like not my thing because I didn't want to be alone.
Yeah, it is very lonely.
Is a lot of bajillion-dollar properties improv? Or
yeah.
It seems like the setup and then just like you go. Like
exactly.
Everyone who's on there seems to be like have a lot of improv background. Yeah,
yeah, they really like grabbed us from, you know, fresh from our respective improv kind of meccas, and yeah, it's very much like that. It's like a premise, there's a setup for the scene, and then we just have to figure out how to get to the end of it.
Yeah,
it's very fun.
That sounds awesome. That sounds like a ton of fun. Did you ever know Andy Myra when you're at Second City?
Oh yeah, wait, how do I know that name?
He was like a director. He's a director there.
Chicago?
Yes.
In Chicago, yeah. Boaz. But yeah, you know Boaz.
I know
right?
Boaz, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, Boaz is sweet. Boaz and I have worked together on one of those corporate gigs I was talking about.
Oh, nice.
Where you're like entertaining Colgate's holiday party in Boca Raton or something.
Yeah, right, yeah. Those are two good friends of mine. That's awesome.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And so did you move to Chicago to be a comedian? Like, that was your dream? Did you go for a different reason, then get into Second City? What was the impetus?
Yeah, I kind of went for regular theater. Like, I went to DePaul and I was studying the classics, and I got out, and my first gig, I think, was with Chicago Shakespeare. I was an understudy, and I was, you know, doing this very serious acting route. And then I was also kind of trying to pursue musicals because I could sing, and so I assumed that I had to do both of those things together. And then I just, the work kind of started drying up because I wasn't really like super, I wasn't competitive enough with the like musical circuit ladies. And then like the straight up Shakespeare and like Greek theater was really bumming me out. So that's about the time I joined up with Langford and was like, maybe I'll just be in a band. And then Second City saw me doing a staged reading somewhere and was like, we'll teach you to do everything. So
cool.
That is awesome.
So you got recruited.
I definitely got recruited. They were desperate for people of color.
With talent. I mean, and with...
It's like the Nick Fury tapping you on the shoulder, like, come join the Avengers thing.
Sure, yeah.
So what made... Like, what attracted you to Stop Making Sense? Like, what's the...
Well...
What's the magnet there?
Well, I joined a Talking Heads tribute band. Yeah, it was one of the most fun things I've ever done.
In Chicago?
Yeah, it's called This Must Be the Band. It was. They just stopped performing. But they every year they did a Stop Making Sense recreation at the Vic.
The whole set list?
The entire thing. Wow. Like costumes, lights, like a full visual and audio recreation.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're very detailed. It was kind of weird. Like, I think they eventually stopped doing it because they felt weird about making money off of someone else's work, frankly. The guys who run it are two really good friends of mine, Charlie Otto and Casey Foster, and they did it so well. Charlie played David Byrne. You know, we had costumes made. And so I played Lynn Mabry, and I had to learn every move. They wanted us to learn, like, mannerisms and, like, you know. So we're watching for, like, facial expressions, like, super detailed. So I first got that gig, and I watched it, like, 47 times.
You guys are, like, cosplayers.
Yeah,
it's Tommy
really.
It's cosplay.
That's, like, the closest thing to cosplaying I've ever done. I was just going to say you'd think that I would hate it after all that watching, but it just gave me this like intense love for the music and the band.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The music's amazing.
Yeah.
That's the part. I mean, that's one of my all-time favorite albums, and also concert footage / docs, you know, is this movie. And the other thing is, like, to be a part of that, you would have to be a pretty athletic person. They do a lot of running.
Oh, yeah, the life during wartime workout video, as I call it.
How big is the stage when you're doing this cover band? Pretty sizable stage.
The first one we did it was at the Park West, which like seats like 900 or something, and the stage was too small. So the next few years we moved to the Vic and then to the Riv, which are like, I think they hold like 2,000 people or something.
Yeah, the Vic's cool. Amazing.
Yeah.
That's a great theater. That's awesome. And how long were you a part of that?
I did it off and on. I did it 5 times. So we would do Stop Making Sense every fall. And then if I was not working with my other band or doing a play, I would tour with them. Like, we'd do a couple weekends in like Colorado or something.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that's so awesome. So you're really busy when you're in Chicago. That's awesome.
I miss it.
Yeah, right. That's the thing about moving to LA. It's like, I used to be busy. Now I live in LA.
I used to like hustle and you know.
Yeah, I feel that. I was in LA for the last couple of years before I came back, and I would sit there and just be like, I don't really have much to do.
Yeah, I don't like that feeling.
No, I don't either. I managed to get rid of that feeling by eating a lot and then drinking a lot, combining those two things.
I did the drinking a lot in Chicago, and here it feels like not cool to do that. No. I feel like Midwest trash when I'm like really wanting to get drunk on a Tuesday, and everyone's like, "No, we have spin in the morning."
Hasn't ride-sharing changed the game for that though? Yeah. I feel like LA wasn't as big of a drinking town before ride-sharing.
Oh, has it changed?
I think it's more of a drinking town now, maybe.
But
it's still not as much as Chicago.
No, that's a good point. I can't compare. You can't compare. No. Also, cigarettes and the bars. Oh, yeah. Right? Is that still the
no?
Legal?
But I remember when it changed.
Like, yeah, it's about 18 years ago or something, and it was like, oh yeah, this is. People were still like, oh like, yeah, eyes were burning up.
Yeah, I remember when people were like arguing about it because they were like, we can't. And I was like, you guys, I grew up in California. Like, there haven't been cigarettes in bars since like the 80s. Mm-hmm. We can do this. And they were like, no, it's cold here. We can't stand outside and smoke.
Oh, a bunch of
that's why
bunch of pussies in Chicago. That is a big drink in town though. For
yeah.
Oh, a couple 2-3 beers.
Oh, a couple 2-3. Yeah, you know.
Get a couple 2-3 beers in you. It's fucked up. And there's, you know, there's an old style bar, you know, every 10
everywhere.
Feet with, mm-hmm. with safety glass and just.
Bunch of Horace and Pete's out there or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I love Chicago. It's such a great comedy town. Such like you said, it's a great theater town and music, man. There's nothing compares. Have you been back lately?
Yeah, I've been back a lot, and our release show will be October 11th at the Hideout, my favorite venue in Chicago. That's kind of our little musical home. But yeah, I go back a lot. Like, I'll go for little block parties to play with the band, or like, I had to film something that I was producing, and I was like, I don't really know the scene in LA. Like, let me just go back to Chicago and do it with all my like cronies, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's still kind of like a security blanket to go back.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
You're filming some sketch stuff that you've written.
It was like a proof of concept for a show that I was pitching, and so I just was like, I bet I can prove to them that I can do this way easier
with your people.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite Talking Heads song?
Ooh, a favorite.
Or
when I was, when I was in Stop Making Sense, my favorite to do was Cross-Eyed and Painless.
It's a great song.
Oh, it's so great because we get to do the headbanging and like it's such a big belting number.
Yeah.
I guess to just sit down and listen to, I really love The Great Curve, which is from Remain in Light.
Yeah.
I love that one.
What about you, George? Do you have a favorite?
From this particular record or just in general? I mean, I was going to get into it. Like, Talking Heads is like the first band that I like got into.
Really?
To be honest, like, which I think maybe dates my interests, but I knew like we'd listen to like the Beatles and stuff growing up, but like this is the first kind of like band where I like read a book about the band, like a weird bio about them, and like, it was a little after David Byrne had put out the movie, True Stories.
Mm-hmm.
And, I feel like he must have been kind of just copping some moves from Jonathan Demme when he made True Stories. I mean, just like color-wise and stuff. I think I came to them around True Stories period, and then I kind of went backwards. And then, I haven't followed David Byrne's solo career, but I have a friend who is like, who I think still works for Lueke Bopp.
Oh, cool.
And does all their graphic design and stuff like that. So it's interesting how he, because like the first two records are pretty much like that agitated, nerdy, you know, almost like punky art new wave band. Mm-hmm, and then they got like, and they're like, then we just got, they work with Eno and just broke everything all open. So I still like those first two records a lot for like, what that's worth, like the really guitar, just like simple, like when they were like playing with like Television and Blondie and shit in New York. So I kind of, I was thinking about it. Like, I think that's like the period of time that gets fetishized a lot as like the New York late 70s.
That CBGB
scene.
Time.
Yeah. Like kind of like, there's so much documentation around that time. It was like they had, you know, you could get written up in the Village Voice or whatever, just for like being a band playing a show. But going back to Talking Heads, Wildlife probably the first thing that really like turned me on, and then I'd say it's still like watching this. I mean, there were so many good hit songs on it. There's so many songs I didn't remember on here actually.
Mm-hmm. Really?
I didn't watch the whole thing start to finish. I just watched YouTube clips because that's all that's up on YouTube. Otherwise, I'd have to like, you can get it on iTunes. But this whole thing was kind of burned in my brain. But then there's like, I'm like, wait, what song is that? I don't know what song that is. There's a couple songs I don't know.
Yeah.
But
like Making Flippy Floppy.
Yeah. I remember making Flippy Floppy. Yeah. There was like the or big swamp. Big business. I was like, what is Big? Record is Big Business
well,
on?
Well, Big Business isn't on. That was an extra.
That was an extra?
On the DVD. And
Okay. Did you get the Blu-ray version of this or the DVD that came out? Okay, so that's why I didn't remember it. It was on the DVD. Okay, it showed up on YouTube as an extra then.
Because they filmed it. That and Ezimbra and Cities, they filmed, but they didn't put it in the final.
So that's all stuff from the DVD extras. Oh, that's what I just watched. I'm like, that's why I didn't remember those. I'm like, why are these in here? But then also just the lighting is so good. And I was thinking about how, this movie and Swimming to Cambodia, I think, are kind of a similar piece, right? Whoa. It's like, they're not in that it's not like, it's Demi like documenting a performance, right? And like, he has great camera angles and things like that, but it's not him as an author, as it were. And I would say that's kind of like, with both of those, the performance is a focus, and he's just like, I'm just getting a really good camera angle on these performances and then editing it.
And to me, it's almost like he's shooting it as though he's on stage with them, which is the feeling that I get, especially from having done a facsimile of the show.
Right. We need to talk about that for sure.
Oh, yeah. I've done a facsimile of it in so many ways.
Awesome.
It's so weird. But it's watching, even rewatching Stop Making Sense, I get that feeling that I get when I'm playing on stage with a band, where you're kind of like, sometimes you're just zoned out and you're watching the guitarist play, or sometimes, you know, whereas normally I feel like a concert film would like zoom out for big moments or show bit, you know, sometimes they'll end on, I remember like Take Me to the River ends with just Jerry Harrison, like, and he's not even doing anything. He's like holding down something on the synth and it zooms in on him in the end. Whereas like the women, the backup singers, David Byrne, everyone's like screaming at the end. It's this huge moment. And we've just got this weird close up on Harrison.
Yeah.
But like, that's the feeling you get when you're standing on stage too, because you might just be looking at something that's not the focus. So it really speaks to me as a musician, because it's part of what I love about performing.
Yeah. I mean, a nine piece band. That's so nuts. It was basically just doubled. They doubled themselves. Yeah.
Yeah. Paco, do you have a favorite Talking Heads song?
I do. Yeah. I have a bunch, but Life During Wartime, I think, has always been my particular favorite.
This Ain't No Party.
Yeah.
This ain't no party. This ain't no disco. Like, it's such a stone cold groove. And
it really is.
It really fucking is. And every time it comes on, I perk up. Like, it doesn't matter if I'm at the shopping, if I'm shopping or out or whatever. I fucking love it. Like, I just watched Stop. I probably have seen Stop Making. I used to own it on VHS and Laserdisc.
I think I have a VHS dub of it somewhere. Yes. Yeah. In my storage unit.
Like, pre-fucking CDs and Pandora and all that stuff is like, you'd go to house parties and you'd throw, like, that VHS on.
Yeah.
You know? And then you'd listen to it over someone's television and party with that. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And whenever that, like, Burning Down the House, Life During Wartime, Swamp is always great. Heaven.
You love, Heaven. Or you really like This Must Be the Place, too, right? Didn't you say that? We talked, when Jonathan Demme passed away, we talked about that,
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And nobody can sing a love song to a lamp like David Byrne.
Yeah.
So true.
It's, and did you guys have that in your show? You
we
must
did,
have.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, he did it all.
Was it like a replica of that kind of tall standing?
Yeah, we went to a thrift store and found it. You know, it was a huge scale production produced by a bunch of hipsters in our 20s. Like, I realized we should have had, like, no knock against our, like, stage manager and stuff, but it really was like this kind of community theater vibe that ended up looking so professional.
That's awesome.
It was really fun, yeah.
That's really what you want in theater. The DIY kind of sense, but with professionalism and a good product and people coming to see it. And the fact that you had to move to a bigger theater, like all of that is a plus.
It really was. I think we could still be doing it to this day if we didn't have that kind of moral quandary about it.
Yeah. Are those guys in other bands?
Yeah, they have an excellent band called Grud that's like, they call it Strange Funk, and it kind of borrows, I don't want to say it borrows from Talking Heads, but I mean, they played it for so many years, I don't think you can not sort of borrow the good things from it, but they're a really cool band.
I had a friend of mine did this thing in Chicago in the 90s, maybe the 90s, early 90s, that was a recreation of an Adam and the Ants set.
Oh.
Yeah, and like they did the set list and everything, and they did the banter in between. I never saw it. I just heard about this. And they call themselves Adam and the Ants.
Yeah.
And they just, it sounds like a similar kind of cosplay kind of scenario. And also like just an early 80s retro thing. But like at that point in the early 90s, it was like, it was only 10 years ago, you know?
Yeah, right.
Recreating Adam and the Ants.
Yeah, my brother used to sing that song when I'd come in from like middle school to me. The, you don't drink, don't smoke. What do you do?
Uh-huh. Oh, and then you did all those things, right?
And, well, yeah. And I ended up doing all the things. But he used to always, because I was such a little Christian kid, you know? It's like, now I hate that band.
Oh, there's so much good Adam Ant, though. There's some real good Adam and the Adam and the Ants, I think, are good. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, let's talk about documentary now.
Yeah, that's weird, right?
Yes, that's so awesome. Especially now knowing about the band part of it is so awesome.
I got that audition just like any other audition.
Yeah.
And, and my manager was straight up like, hey, do you know? And what's weird is that like I've met Fred before because he used to be married to my friend Sally. Yeah, from the Mekons.
Yeah.
And I didn't know them when they were married. I met Sally right after, but they had a good relationship and she, well, I don't want to speak for her, but
they were in touch.
They're in touch, yeah. And when I think I tested for SNL or something.
Oh, yeah?
And she had him call me to like give me a pep talk or whatever. And
what?
I, you know.
How was that pep talk?
I mean, it was amazing. I was like this little sketch nerd. I was like a 25-year-old kid being like, Fred Armisen's calling me.
Yeah. And he's one of the most successful music guys who transitioned into comedy.
Yeah, I'd say.
Yeah.
And so, but he didn't remember meeting me. He certainly didn't like, he didn't even hire me. I think his producer did.
Right.
But I got that audition and I was like, if I don't get this fucking job, everything is meaningless.
What was it all for if you don't get that? If you don't book that gig. I just assumed they just knew you and like.
Let's go with that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like, of course. I mean, they just were like, and then you, and then Maya, and then, you know.
Oh, I wish. They definitely just picked Maya. And then I think for our roles, the other woman in it with me, the other backup singer, is the girl from that band. This Must Be the Band. Because I just sent in, we were supposed to do like a tape, and they were looking for like real backup singers. I say real, like, you know, the Claudia Lanier's of the modern world that are like, you know, these like band backup singers. But the added component of it being a comedy show, I think they were a little like, how well do we need these women to sing versus how well do we need them to like service the joke? Mm-hmm. So they kind of did like not an open call, but they like, whatever. I got the audition and I was supposed to like tape myself singing Take Me to the River or something. So I just sent clips from our
thing.
I was just like, here we go. We already did this.
We did this already.
Instead of me standing in my living room singing a couple measures of this, why don't I just send you this professionally produced tape of me actually doing this?
And of me like in the costume. And so from that tape, they were like,
perfect.
Great, you're hired, and can we get that other girl too?
Oh, awesome. Wow, she must have loved you after that.
I mean, hope so.
Yeah. She's still in Chicago, or is she here?
Yeah,
now?
She's in Chicago.
Oh, nice. And I
was just gonna say, I love you, like halfway through that where you guys are just laying on the stage, like as the arc of the story becomes more tepid and stuff, and then you guys are just that cracks me up.
Well, that was funny I noticed that bit was like, he's doing that Tom Waits movie. That Tom Waits movie.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of stuff in here that's just the 80s.
Yeah, there's like, a little like the last
one. Like waltz. Maya Rudolph's song is like The Motels or something.
Yeah, it's actually a Matthew Sweet song.
Oh, it is actually? Yeah. A Matthew Sweet cover?
It is a cover of his song, which
good
I didn't
for
know.
For Matthew Sweet to get that in there, to get the publishing on that.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool. I didn't know that either. Yeah, it does kind of go in some strange tangents, one being Tom Waits. And it's How Did I Get Here? Is that the name of that episode?
No, it's a Test Pattern.
Oh, Test Pattern.
Test Pattern's a band, and then I think it's called Final Transmission.
Oh, you're right. Thank you, yeah.
Just looking at your IMDb. No,
Final Transmission.
How much rehearsal did you guys do for that?
We did like 2 days. Like, we did like a day of just us with the band, and Maya wasn't there yet. So we were just kind of figuring out, you know, and a lot of, like, I loved working with Fred because it was kind of similar to working with Langford, probably because they were friends for so many years. Because it's kind of just like, okay, I trust that you know what you're doing, so just do it with confidence, and then I don't have any notes for you.
Okay, does he direct as well as star in those?
No, the director's name is escaping me. He was a lovely guy, but but Fred wrote all the music. He and John Spurney, the keyboardist, wrote all the music together, and they kind of had the vision. So, you know, we had to come up with choreography and stuff. So Casey and I were just like lifting actual choreography
you'd already done it for like 10 years.
Years,
or
yeah. So. Well,
that's awesome. Let's hear a clip from this documentary now.
You're seeing the history of the band sort of unfolding, and we got some more friends.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So, yeah, this is such a funny clip. I also have a friend who worked on this show. I don't know if she worked on this episode, but she's a set designer.
Oh, cool.
Katie Byron. So she worked on a couple of the documentaries. I know she worked on the one that was like basically Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
Yeah.
Which is like the tortilla one because she was posting about it on Facebook. And she also works on that Dirk Gently show.
Oh, cool.
Which I haven't watched yet.
I watched a bit of it. It looks beautiful. So hats off to
your friend.
I
read those books back in the day. It was funny because like she asked for... I guess one of the characters, is it Elijah Wood? His character is like a musician or something. So she was like, does anyone have music posters that they could donate to the show? I'm like, I got a bunch.
Yeah.
And so she's just like, well, just like send me the image and I'll just print it out. So like there's a scene where Dirk Gently is like going into Elijah Wood's apartment and there's all these posters from like bands that I was in.
It's all your
shows
taste.
That I had put on. I'm like, oh, weird.
That's so cool.
Super weird. Yeah. But it's a very funny clip. And you were saying that you did a bit of rehearsal with them. Where did they shoot? What theater is it that got shot in? The real Stop Making Sense I was reading was at the Pantages, which I've never been to. But
I've been to it once.
Yeah, yeah.
This was at the San Gabriel Mission Theater out in like, what is that, Altadena?
Okay, sort of just like, San Gabriel area.
Yeah, San Gabriel,
That's funny, because you just found that clip of, didn't they play a show in San Gabriel? The Tess Pattern, Maya Rudolph, and Bill and Fred? And maybe, is it John Worster on the drums?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
They played some show in San Gabriel. I'm like, what a weird place for that show to happen.
Was that the poster for the taping?
Yes.
Oh, was it for that actual? Oh, did they actually get a whole live audience for that?
Yeah, they thought.
Oh, okay.
They thought they were going to get like 150 people, and they were just like, wear 80s attire if you want. Because they just put it out like maybe 24 hours or 48 hours before the show.
Uh-huh. Oh, really? Okay.
And they had like 1,000 people show up.
Awesome. Oh, yeah. We found the poster. Paco found the poster for that. I didn't realize that was the actual taping. Yeah. I thought they did it again afterward.
Yeah, no. They did it. They did something at like, I want to say they did something at like Outside Lands or no, they did something at, I don't know. They did a live show at like a music festival that I was dying to go to, but I didn't rank high enough.
You were in Outside Lands last year. Right?
I was, yeah.
Yeah, what did you do at Outside Lands?
Oh, you guys were there?
Yeah, he was there.
I had a show in the Barbary Town. We met briefly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm remembering this now.
Yeah, he's bigger than he looks on a Skype screen. This is maybe the issue.
Not this big.
Yeah.
I'm not. I'm just slightly bigger. But Janet Varney's a good friend of mine, and you guys were. You were there. You were at Outside Lands last year. What were you doing?
Janet and I were with Paul F. We were doing his podcast, Spontaneation. And actually, Fred was the guest, which was really funny and weird.
That's what I was about to say. And then did you catch him and Bob Mole when they did
thing?
Yeah, that was
cool.
What did him and Bob Mole do together? Did I miss this last year?
They played some tunes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
And they took turns playing
R.I.P. Grant Hart.
And guitar.
Yeah. Grant Hart just passed away. Yeah.
I know.
When we tape this. Fred's an amazing drummer. I've never seen Bob Mould play drums, though.
They took
pretty
turns.
Damn good.
Yeah.
Nice.
And R.I.P. Jonathan Demme, too.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We definitely need it. Do you see what I'm saying about swimming to Cambodia, though? Do you think that makes sense, what I'm saying about swimming to Cambodia?
Yeah. I never thought about it, but yeah, they both kind of have that style. You know, it's kind of flat.
Yeah. Hmm. And it's like the same time period, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Like I think like mid 80s.
I just watched that because I did my one man show this year, so I watched Swimming to Cambodia to get some influence. Some flutes.
I haven't seen it.
So good.
Oh,
really?
And they did a documentary now of it as well.
Oh yeah. Oh.
They did like a character. I forget the name of the character, but it's basically I saw like when you see just the previews for that's the thing about it's such a nerdy thing.
Yeah.
The documentary now, I'm like what I love about it's like with what you guys did with that episode, it's like the joke is the whole thing. Like the whole thing is a joke. It's like it's a meta joke that there's individual jokes inside of it, which is mostly like the dialogue stuff. But then it's just Fred doing his version of Tom Waits is so fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, and Bill Hader doing that that terrible song, which when we rehearsed it, you know, because a lot of those songs they're funny and whimsical and they're
satirical,
but they are good.
Yeah.
Except for that one, which
that
Armisen.
Awesome.
I mean, the first day when we got there, he was like, "Hey guys, this song is supposed to be really bad."
It is like straight up like a suburban lawn song though that I have on this record where it's like there's a song about computer dating from like 1982 and like he does that voice and everything just like da, 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 da. It's like there is such a small subset of like bands like bands from 1983 where they thought like you know the future was a printer that had those sheets with like the hole punches
on
the
Ditto
side.
Machines yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ditto machine like technology songs.
I just love how like Fred like or throws him under the bus in the intro of the song.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
tells him, go ahead and intro the song after he just came under the bus. And then like, when he's in the middle of intro and he turns around and he's like, 1, 2, 3. And they just start.
So, and he's like, it's almost over. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's like, that's so like every band has like that Ringo song or whatever.
Well, we've all been in bands too where like there's that one dick who's just like, you know, he's just going to take it to the audience, you know, make fun of it.
Yeah. Yep, he's going to sell you out.
Yeah, I've certainly been in some of those situations. So how long was it just a one-day shoot when you guys did this?
Yeah, we rehearsed one day, and then we went to the theater the next day, and it was like an all-day. They did all their pre-taping stuff, and then we kind of tried to rehearse with Maya, because Maya flew in that morning, and she had to like get into hair and makeup, do all the pre-tape, you know, all the interviewee confessional stuff, do the photo shoot, like where you see her with the wedding gown and stuff, and then learn all the songs.
Oh.
And she was so amazing because she was like, I think I thought this was less, Fred. I think you told me this was less.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, it's just a couple songs. She's like, that entire Matthew Sweet song, I have to know. And he was like, it's okay. And he turned to me and he goes, well, if you lose a word, Tawny knows it. So, because like in the rehearsal, I had sung it.
Oh,
I was
wow.
like, there's no way in right. hell I'm jumping on Maya Rudolph to like pick up a word she drops.
Oh my gosh. In front of a live audience to boot.
Oh yeah. In front of 1,000 people who are there to see her and don't care about who I am.
Right. That is awesome, man. That's a great story. I love Maya Rudolph. Oh my Lord. She's one of
so
my
cool.
favorites.
So, does she not live in LA?
I think she lives in New York, or she flew in from New York. I don't really know.
Did you get a chance to audition for SNL?
I did, yeah, in 2011, I think. It was a long time ago.
What was that all about? I mean, how did, like, walk us through that a little bit. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean,
I mean, is this going to turn into, like, what the WTF? Like, I got a problem with Lorne.
Oh, no, I have no problem with anyone other than it was just, like, it was very clear to me that I was not meant to be on that show. Mm. And then I think it quickly became clear to them when I auditioned. But, yeah, I was, like, really young in my sketch career. And I went the same year that Adie Bryant went, who's a good friend of mine, and she's even younger than I am, but she'd been doing sketch and improv for so much longer. And I knew, I could just tell, like, I didn't know she was going to get it, but I was like, she's so much more sure of her own comedic voice, and I'm still figuring it out. It just didn't make sense for me to get hired.
She's Second City also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were on stage together.
But the format of the audition, I think it's always like you got to do a couple characters and a couple impressions.
Yeah, sometimes they say like 3 and 3. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I did like 2 and 4 because I don't really do impressions. So.
Do you have any singing?
Yeah, I did do that. I did an original song that I wrote about a confused woman who doesn't understand what Christmas is. It was really heady stuff. So yeah, I think I did a Jesse Jackson impression. I was all over the place. It was not
2011,
great.
2011, on the nose, a little on the nose.
I did Jesse Jackson, and I think I did MIA, because I was like, who's brown with an accent?
No one. Wait, I've never seen anyone do an MIA impression.
For good reason.
She's got that weird accent, like Cockney kind of?
It's a little Cockney,
can
like
you,
Sri Lankan.
Can you drop a little MIA?
No, I absolutely will not.
No, that's amazing. If we ever need a character bit that's like someone as MIA, we'll come to you.
Okay,
that's,
call me. It really involved just me wearing cool sunglasses, so.
Yeah, going peace.
Yeah.
Oh my.
No, I'm not going to do the impression that got me banned from SNL.
Where was the audition?
It was in the, it wasn't on their stage. It was in New York. Normally they do it on their stage, I guess, but for whatever reason, it was on the Jimmy Fallon set. So it was cool. I got to play the guitar that the Roots normally play.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's fun. So you're a guitar player as well.
Yeah, a little bit. I'm not great, but I can play a good comedy guitar.
Nice. Yeah, just a couple strums.
Yeah, I know all the chords.
Any other like brushes? Like almost like I got cut out of this thing, because that's happened to all of us. I think we get like
it happens constantly. Now. I like to say I test for things all the time, and then they give it to a famous person. Mm-hmm. I think I'm like a fun almost choice. People are like, what if we had a crazy idea and hired this person? And then they're like, no, get Naomi Campbell.
Yeah, that sucks. But I mean, you know, when you're rubbing elbows, that's the important part, I suppose. You know?
Yeah.
If you're considered, it's all about being considered.
Yeah, and it's always been fun. Like, going to SNL was fun. I knew I wouldn't get it, but it was cool.
Yeah. I found was kind of interesting that I didn't know. Stop Making Sense. It premiered at the San Francisco International Film Festival.
Oh, did not know that.
'84. Yeah,
me either.
So that's where it got its launch, and then obviously went to some more theaters. But it's kind of crazy to like this thing did really well in the theaters.
Yeah, I was reading too about how they put their own money into it. Like they basically. It's like they got a loan from Warner Brothers, but it was against their royalties. So they were like betting their livelihoods on this project that could have gone any number of ways. It's like Demi had only made, I guess, like Melvin and Howard at that point, or like as far as big movies.
Uh-huh.
And he was apparently working on some movie with Goldie Hawn at the time. And like Goldie Hawn wanted to reshoot everything that she was in the movie.
Oh,
so he had to send his like producing partner, his girlfriend, who was also helping produce, and she did all like she like figured out like where the cameras needed to be for all the shots and stuff.
Wow.
But yeah, they really took a huge gamble, like sinking their own money into that.
Yeah, I'd say.
Wow, and they were not like a stadium band. They weren't a stadium band at that time. Like I don't know, the Pantages is maybe what, I don't know if it's 2000 or something, but you know, they were not even doing like Warfield size shows.
Right. Yeah. That's pretty nuts.
So were they playing bigger shows then after that, like because of the film?
Oh, no. Well, so they stopped touring after this. That's what
you're
the
right.
story
it's their
is.
Last.
It's the last tour they did.
Yeah, you're right.
There's so much. It's funny because like the test pattern thing, it really plays up the tension. But like when you read anything about those guys, everyone's just like, yeah, David.
Yeah.
Like no one wants to say,
right.
Like no one really wants to call it out, but it's like, yeah. He's a little intense and
yeah,
difficult
it seemed
to work
like
with.
It was a little bit hard to.
But such to like a visionary dude at the same time. So
absolutely.
But yeah. I mean, Tom Tom Club were bigger than Talking Head. I think that song is probably bigger than any individual Talking Head song. Probably.
I wonder. Yeah, you think it's bigger than like Burning Down the House?
Possibly, and in terms
sampling.
Of like maybe how much for once. I mean, like no. I know like one other Tom Tom Club song, like Wardy Rapping Hood is the only other Tom Tom Club song I know. So, oh yeah. Like when you guys did the switchover for in your group, it's all the same people, right? But you had the same people do the same bits from Tom Tom Club?
Yeah, we did. So our bassist, Jamie, who was playing Tina Weymouth, she sang lead on it and then Casey and I backed her up.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever seen David Byrne live?
No.
I saw Jerry Harrison once at South by Southwest. He was just eating like huevos rancheros like by himself in like a Mexican breakfast joint. And I'm like, I have a lot of questions for you, but you don't seem like you want to talk to anyone. Like if Jerry Harrison like wants to eat alone during South by Southwest, that's the only reason that like, otherwise I'm sure there's like gadflies, like, can we talk about Modern Lovers? Can we talk about this? Can we talk about, you know?
I got stuck in a corner with, this is going to sound made up, but it's true. Jerry Harrison, Kelly Carlin, who's George Carlin's daughter, and Robin Williams. It was me, Robin, Kelly, and Jerry Harrison.
Oh, because Jerry lives in Marin, right?
He lives in Marin, and he came with Robin to a comedy show I did. And backstage, the most of the crowd went backstage to follow Jerry and Robin, and then no one was brave enough to talk to them, so they wanted to get away, and they came over to me and like, can we hide in the corner with you? So it was me, Kelly, Jerry, and Robin.
Nice.
Just kind of
nuts. That's a cool little trifecta.
I know, it's like so
I guess
odd.
It's four people.
And then Robin was talking to Kelly about George Carlin and like seeing him and meeting him, and then Jerry was like, oh, there's this time, and I was like, this is the coolest little group of conversation I think I've ever been a part of.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Accepting this conversation, obviously.
Except for this one. This one's
I'd rather talk to Jerry Harrison than me.
I also heard that David Byrne, maybe his daughter went to CCA because people would be seeing him around Oakland.
Oh.
And it'd be just like, David Byrne just hanging out at the coffee shop with his crazy streak of white hair that he has now. Like he's got that crazy Silver Fox look going.
Yeah, he does. I used to see Jim Jarmusch. Same. He used to
in San Francisco?
Yeah. Yeah, he would go to that bar on Cap Street, and then he'd go to the Philosopher's Club, that bar. And I'd see him sometimes there. But I did, so I went to the CMJ conference in like 95, I think, or 96 in New York. And I got to see David Byrne sing with the Flaming Lips at CBGB's.
Oh, nice.
Ooh,
and it was
that's cool.
Awesome. Yeah, it was really great.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Who in this day and age can do a crazy concert film like this? What's the last good concert film?
Ooh.
I mean, this is like 80, this is 30 plus years ago, 35 years ago now.
Yeah.
84.
I don't feel like I've really watched a lot since.
No.
People were dancing in the aisles when this was in theaters. That was the other thing they were talking about, is like, they, instead of opening wide, they were like, they targeted like art houses,
yeah,
and like colleges. And I think they would have lost all the money if they tried to open wide.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is like the definition of like cult.
Yeah.
This is like when you could still like, you know,
Rocky
video
Horror.
Store era. Yeah. They said, like, even Chris Frantz said that, like, I haven't seen people dancing since like Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
And like to our own music, you know?
Yeah. That's yeah. so cool.
I don't know, like, who's done a great concert film since this?
I couldn't I don't know, probably The Police, or, you know, like, or maybe Metallica or something.
I don't know.
Well, that Metallica doc focuses so much on the studio, right? Have you guys done that one yet?
We haven't done it. We have someone who said they will do it if he's listening.
Ooh.
We'll still have you on,
yeah.
even though...
Strange Little Monsters, what's it called?
Some kind of monster. I like what you said, though.
Yeah, yours is better.
I think that's actually what we should change the podcast name to.
Strange
I would prefer
monsters.
That. Yeah. yeah.
That's all I do is title things. That's my job. I just title
that's a good
things
job.
That don't exist. Yeah. I and it's always like I'm turning to my mom where everything it's kind of close to being real, but it's just left of
yeah.
center. It's
like, I yeah. do that too.
Yeah.
Because you're giving, like, I give up. I'm like, you know, Strange Little Monsters, you know.
We were watching the Edward Snowden movie that Oliver Stone made with uh-huh. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and my girlfriend was like, you know, we should, yeah, Snowden with the Jason Love Hewitt. I'm like, you just mixed up, like,
everything.
So many sub things together. And I know, I'm like, I could see the A to C of it.
Yeah.
I'm like, there's an A to C here, but you really went to, like, A to D on yeah. that one.
Yeah. Let's play a little game, and neither of you guys are prepped for this, but who cares? If you were to cast Stop Making Sense, who would play David Byrne?
In your right, movies? I wouldn't say Fred Armisen off the bat at all.
Right.
But so we're talking about like a different, like actually, like the biopic of
yes,
Talking Heads,
the dramatic narrative yeah. of Stop Making
Man.
Sense. You are now the casting director.
She's like kind of taller, but I for some reason I like the actress from *Halt and Catch Fire* for Tina Weymouth, and I want to say I'll dig up her name. It's have you watched that show,
uh-uh.
*Halt and Catch Fire*?
No.
Yeah, there's the character that plays.
Now, are we wanting this person to be able to sing as well, or are we going to do like a little overdub sitch?
Right, like a Val Kilmer.
Yeah,
or, Val Kilmer
like
did
a Natalie
do his
Wood.
Singing, right?
Did he? I don't know.
In The Doors, did Val Kilmer do his?
Yeah.
Probably,
because
that singing was
doors.
Such like
it was so
nonsense.
Bad.
That's
anyway.
Like, yeah, it's
who
accurate.
Can't do Jim Morrison? Everyone can do Jim Morrison.
Right?
No, let's say this person just by looks, and if we need to do overdubs.
And acting skill somewhat, or just, yeah, like if you were going to, like a shitty biopic, like the Germs biopic had
right.
some pretty shitty acting.
Then
there.
Maybe, what's his name from Hidden Figures and The Big Bang Theory?
Oh, Jim, yeah.
Yeah,
oh. Young
Jim
Sheldon.
Parsons.
Oh,
yeah.
Whoa. That's
for David Byrne, I see it. I see
I
what you're saying
too.
There. A little bit more like a homeschool David Byrne.
I don't know if he sings. I want them to sing, but I understand right. That's not a requirement.
Well, who sings that could pull that off? Oh, what about
Cillian Murphy.
Oh yes.
Do you see it?
I don't know. That
Do you know, I'm gonna dig him up on. I'm gonna type his name into this, and you'll see what I'm saying for Cillian Murphy.
Okay.
Which is a very weird choice, like a kind of more like the Psycho Killer version of David Byrne.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I'm gonna say that guy.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah. Like
I'm
he
sorry, I didn't
would
know
be
who
a great
were,
David Byrne.
Yeah.
You
buy
see
it?
You uh-huh. see like the weird, the sallow kind of. Deep set eyes and the cheekbones.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, he really is nailing it.
You guys
saw
that I didn't write anything down, right?
You didn't write anything down.
Because when I came up with, so I have cast and then I wrote Peaky Blinders.
Oh, you did? No fucking way.
That's like,
there's a reason we do a podcast together. I still haven't figured out what it is, but.
That's why this podcast is so successful.
That's why.
It's because of our chemistry.
John Hader as Jerry Harrison. No, that's kind of a diss. That's not. Oh, Mackenzie Davis is the actress I'm thinking of. That's from *Halt and Catch Fire*. She's not exactly Tina Weymouth, but I like her for Tina Weymouth.
Hmm.
And then, Chris Franz. I don't know. He's kind of got an everyman kind of quality to him.
He also kind of has like a. He always looks 20 years old. Like,
yeah, even
now he kind of has a look of like this little college punk.
Yeah, I'm going to Google image Chris Franz and see, cuz the last time I saw him was maybe I think I saw Tom Tom Club on one of the late night shows. Yeah, he kind of just looks like Bill Clinton-ish a little bit, you know. young Chris Franz looks like young Bill Clinton, actually.
Kind of.
I think about it. Like looking, yeah, Cillian Murphy, God, is perfect.
Yeah.
I'm saying, like, we almost need to just make this now.
Yeah.
Jerry has kind of a little bit of a button nose thing going on.
I think Adam Scott might be able to pull off something.
A Chris Franz?
Yeah.
You think? Oh man, that'd be so funny.
I think we've nailed this. I think we've got
done
it all
a really
figured
good
out.
Job with this.
Okay.
Yeah. But then of course Tawny needs to be in it.
Oh yes, yeah.
And Tawny's in it for
the tour.
I'll
and
just
Brittany
be Lynn
Worrell.
Mabry, like I always am.
There's so many people from P-Funk that were in it too, I guess. Like Bernie Worrell's from P-Funk.
Well, dude, if you're gonna put together like a composite band of some players, where else are you gonna go? Mm-hmm. And Bernie would be on my list too. I'd be like, mm-hmm. Bernie, I need you on the keys. And some of his little cutaway looks, so awesome. I love Bernie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I do too. And Alex Weir just hopping around. Alex Weir was in a different movie than everybody else. Like,
right?
He was running and jumping and kicking. Like, he's even kicking during.
Duck walking in this. There's a lot of duck walks. Yeah.
He's losing his mind even during This Must Be the Place. He's like freaking out. You know, it's this tight close up. Everyone's standing there so somber and he's doing high kicks. Yeah. I love it.
Just watching this now, I'm like thinking, I'm like, I didn't see any monitors. Where are the monitors? It's above chest most of the time, so you don't see the monitors or anything. Mm. But in, like most like concert things, you'd think you'd see that a little bit, which is just that's just a weird thing to notice.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's not that weird, but I get you. And so did you get to hang out much with like Bill Hader or Fred on set, or is it just like Bing Bang Boom?
Yeah, we did. We got to like sit there and kind of. You know, it's sort of like being in a band or
Seth
like.
Seth Meyers are too, because he's a producer. Right?
He was not there, but yeah, he's a producer. So, yeah. It was weird because it's almost like, you know, when it had that feeling of being in theater and like teching a show where you're like, I just have to stand here and wait while they adjust this light and while they figure it out. So it was different from on camera stuff because you couldn't go away and like sit in your little chair and get on your phone. Mm-hmm. So there was a moment where Casey and I were sitting there and we all got pushed over to the side in the wings because they were bringing out that Indonesian gamelan.
Oh, the gamelan scene.
There's 15 of these musicians being wheeled out on this huge thing. So we were kind of like tucked away and Maya and Bill and Fred were like tucked back in there with us and everybody's just like doing bits and like shooting the shit. And it just felt very like, felt like high school drama, you know, like we're hanging out with the cool kids while they like make jokes.
Yeah.
Afterwards, Casey was like, I felt so uncomfortable. I didn't feel like I could hang.
Was that like a real gamelan
crew
that they got? Were they kind of in on the joke of it?
It's hard to tell. I was a little concerned about that at first. I was like, are we poking fun at these people's cultural heritage?
They're making fun of like Paul Simon Graceland.
Totally.
Basically.
Which I'm all for. Love Paul Simon.
Which is the weird thing of like clearly David Byrne like knows whereof he is working. And he was really into Fela Kuti and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But when those two records came out, And it, even with this tour, there is like sort of a weird racial thing happening with like, just like, it starts with these Rhode Island, like, you know, yeah. school design people, and then it just becomes funkier. And
yeah.
funkier. And they were always like funky, but they were like definitely like agitated white people funky
yeah.
in the beginning. And then they got legit funky.
Yeah. So. Then they get people from P-Funk to come out and surround them with funky, funk.
You go to P-Funk. Yeah.
You go to P-Funk.
Come on.
But yeah, the Gamelon folks seemed very, I didn't have a lot of interaction with them, but I know that they went to, I think they went to the Indonesian like embassy and like asked for cultural groups that played that type of music. So they did it the right way. They like hired a talented group of musicians. It wasn't like,
I thought it sounded good. I like Gamelon sound. So
yeah.
Anyway.
I think what they did was that I believe they played, you know, how they would normally play. And I think the joke was that Fred then laid nonsense words over
just
it.
Just improv. Yeah. Oh my God.
And we kind of had to sing along. And I remember being like, what are these words? And Fred was like, it doesn't matter. He's like, just make noises.
Oh my God.
So your mics were on. They were live.
Everyone played and sang live, including Bill. Bill played the bass. Maya played the synth.
And there was no rehearsal with the Gamelon, so it was just the day of, just like, we're just going to riff.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's
impressive. One take riffing?
We did,
or like
we
a
did
long
the full
take.
Show twice. Okay. So, yeah.
So Bill can actually play bass?
Yeah, he learned for this.
Wow. And yeah. And they had the headless Steinberger bass, which was like,
yeah.
Perfect.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So cheesy.
The 80s.
So cheesy. Bass. I had one, and it was a plastic see-through body.
Oh my God.
It yeah. was awesome. It had like lights in it and stuff. So
my yeah. bass player got one of those when we were for my band Kit, but it was actually very convenient for travel, like for traveling to Europe and stuff. It's just like, yeah, this thing is way easier to travel with.
Yeah.
And it looks dorky, but like, yeah, you look like you belong in Test Pattern, I guess. He was a big Test Pattern was a big influence on us in 2012 or whenever we did.
I mean, come on. Yeah. Find a band that wasn't influenced by them.
It's tough. It's really hard. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
Game changers.
And I think they actually recorded Muscle Shoals early.
Oh, yeah, probably. That was like, David Hood on bass before Bill Hader took over.
Yeah. Right on. Are you a big Doc fan?
Do
you like to
I
kick
guess,
back and watch docs?
I guess I tend to watch like music docs, yeah. Like I tend to have always seen the music doc that people are talking about, even if it's not really my type of music.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't do a lot of like food docs because I'm like, well, let's just all die. Let's die.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I watch the food, like the Bourdain kind of food docs.
Yeah,
not
I like those.
The industrial.
Right. Like here's why everything's going to kill you.
Farming. There's so many of those right now.
I
yeah.
know. I
There's
really
so
feel like.
Many.
Natalie Portman just did one.
But isn't everyone just coming down to the conclusion, like, just eat more vegetables? Everyone just, whatever else you do, just eat more vegetables?
I just found out I have to eat more vegetables.
Everyone does.
Everyone needs to eat more fruit and vegetables, but I'll be damn. I'm going to eat steak. I mean, I'm sorry.
Like, just don't watch those movies.
Exactly.
When the apocalypse comes, we're going to eat Paco, though. The Paco apocalypse.
It'll be
Paco Tuesdays.
Don't eat my lips, because then it's just Paco lips.
Oh jeez!
Oh boy!
I guess I started it.
You did.
Yeah.
The softball.
Yeah.
I was just a passenger.
Like, let's grade this. If you were teaching an improv class,
how did we pass that around?
You know, there was a lot of yes anding. There was a lot of agreement. It was just at the end when we all decided it was a bad idea.
I'm a no butter.
I'll give it an 8, 8.5.
Did you teach ever?
A little bit, yeah.
See. Yeah, this is we just are so in sync.
Samesies.
Don't make an in sync joke.
Or in LA. Okay.
Yeah, I sort of taught like I was more like teaching theater games. I used to teach for a foster holding center for like children that were between foster homes, and it was kind of like an after school program to keep kids from, you know, falling to nefarious activities. Mm-hmm. So it was really cool, but it was funny. It was like deep Southside Chicago. Teaching improv, being like, okay, zip, zap, zop. And a lot of these kids are like, fuck you. They were like cool with me because they knew I wasn't trying to make them do real work. So if anything, I was like, just please, like, hurt each other during this hour we're together.
Right. You're right. Like, this kind of improv. Yeah, it's just, we'll play. We'll do space work. Yeah.
This is called
it's
called zip, zip, zip. Nobody's wrong. You can't be wrong on this.
Everyone's fine.
Everyone's fine. Nobody will zop. Can you explain Harold to me?
No, I can't. Okay. You know why? Because I never did UCB, and my IO training was limited. And at Second City, we kind of do it, but like, we do our own thing. So I get in real trouble when I try and jump into a Herald because I don't like, I also don't, I'm such a brat in that I learned to carve my own voice through like picking and choosing the best of all improv, like, you know, whatever rules. So that now when I got to LA and everything's so divided by this dogma of like, you must be game oriented at UCB, you must be crazy characters with wigs at Groundlings, it makes me really, I feel really allergic to like the tribalism of it. So
that's interesting.
I won't start on the Herald because somebody will yell at me and be like, you're explaining it wrong.
We're kind of the same with like, you know, because we're comics that like to hump stools.
Oh, okay.
And there's like non-stool humping world, which we call like alt, you know.
Yeah.
And then there's like real comics that hump stools.
Okay, kind cool. Of,
like we have holes cut out in our stools.
And that's
for
like
our actual hard dicks to get. Okay, never mind.
Well, that's the LA way.
That's the only way.
That's how they do. Because I've always been kind of confused by that stuff, the Herald thing versus other different forms of like short form, long form.
Well, Bay Area only has like a couple of improv schools to go to choose from, right? There's only a few.
Yeah, there's now some there's small, just, like, some good
one.
Ones. Though.
There's like Bats. I think Bats is it still. I don't even know. I was, and I have to say, I was part of a gigantic con job. By someone who came here and hired a bunch of us to be San Francisco's first Second City theater.
And it turned out
to be a giant con.
With like the logo and everything?
Everything. He said he was
What?
You sure it wasn't just actually Second City and then they bailed on it?
No, because by the end we called Second City and they were like, we don't know
person
is.
What?
Yeah, in 2006, there was a giant audition for Second City San Francisco, and and five other people got in, and then there was a director that got hired, and a costume person, and a set person, and this guy conned everybody.
Whoa.
And then would go to these parties and say, look at these pictures I've taken of Second City San Francisco, we're raising money, and he would get like $10,000 checks from people, because he's like, we're starting Second City San Francisco.
What?
Then we rented a theater. We had rehearsals and we had a 6-week run.
Oh my God.
And when we got to the theater, Matt Shelton, who owns Shelton Theater, where it was at, said, hey, you need to pay me. No one's giving me any money. It's a $5,000. And we're like, oh, Adam will be here in a second. And then the website designer came in and said, no one's ever paid me. Then the t-shirt guy came in and said, I've never gotten any money. They just kept walking in.
I'm dying to know who this is.
Adam Buchanan. Adam Buchanan.
Adam Buchanan.
Called out.
I don't know this person.
Shots fired.
I'm wondering if he like took a few classes. I'm wondering if the Chicago scene knows him, and then he like came out with this little scam.
Yes, I believe that is what happened. I think he got kicked out of Second City in Chicago, and then came out here and was just like, I'm with Second City, and we all fucking fell for it. Until the one night when we're all huddled in Matt Shelton's office and each person, Dan Dion took our photographs and he's a famous comedy photographer. And he was like, someone owes me $500. And we're all just like, we all got conned. And so,
oh my God.
What a nut swindle. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Matt was like, well, you can't do your run because no one's paying me, but you're all here. I'll let you have the night for free and you can go out and do your show. So we had a one night of a 6-week run that we did.
Yeah, I got a suggestion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Payment for services.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm such
a
fucking gossip. I'm such a Second City gossip because that building, they gave me my career. They're also a trash fire of an HR disaster waiting to happen. So I am going to text everyone I know who would have been around at that time and be like, who is this dude? What happened?
12 years ago.
I love. We have like, they're like these ghost stories from that place because it's just so many people have passed through there and
that is such a specific hustle for someone to try to do in the age of the internet. If it was like the 90s, I could people were just on like bulletin boards. I could see it maybe getting a little further.
Yeah.
But just like, whoa, that's actually funny. You know, you and I had this weird thing early before we knew each other where someone put that they were part of Killing My Lobster on a flyer.
Yeah.
And then I got an email from you about it. I'm like, dude, he's like, hey, who's this guy? I'm like, I literally do not know who this dude is. And then no one really knew the guy. I didn't even see him do stand up, but he just thought it was funny to use like the sketch group in San Francisco that had been around forever and use that as a credit.
It's like as if we don't all talk and like as if we don't all know each other. I get that a lot when people are like, oh yeah, do you know so and so? She did Second City in Chicago. And I'm like, no, she didn't. Like if she's older than me, younger than me, we all know each other.
Right.
You can't slip by.
You can't, no. And that's like, I was the managing director of the sketch comedy group, theater group, and this dude, we were getting phone calls because they're like, hey, you're performing at George's Place, the Lost Weekend Video. And I was like, no, I don't know. What are you talking about? We have no show scheduled. And they're like, we're buying tickets to come see you. And I'm like, the group's not there.
Holy shit. What a weird thing.
I know. Like, that's a small stakes in San Francisco, too. It's like, it's a small stakes thing to brag about.
And, yeah.
But, like, someone trying to start, like, if someone's just like, I'm going to start a UCB Alameda or something like that.
Yeah.
Or, like, a UCB Oakland.
Vacaville.
Yeah, UCB Vacaville.
Oh, like, boy.
Look, I'm trying to start a Woos in LA right now. I'm trying to try to.
The game is get out of the Woos.
That's like a serial killer movie. It's like a giant hedge maze, right?
But it was wooden.
It was a wooden maze. That actually sounds like a legit fire hazard.
It was.
In the fire country.
When they tore it down, they allowed the local fire department to use it for training practice.
Wow.
Vacaville is known for like a prison, maze.
An onion festival.
And Tawny Newsom.
Yeah.
And I think maybe.
And Papa Roach.
And, whoa. Okay. Let's change the order up.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
under the Vacaville Wikipedia, famous residents. You gotta be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's maybe a good way to close our discussion.
Oh,
and like,
God.
Yeah, let's roach it up. Oh, this
I regret.
Everything. Don't say roach in this apartment. Ugh.
No.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Tawny.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
Yeah. Okay, so we were just gabbing about all this music stuff off mic. And Tawny just dropped a bomb.
Dropped it on us.
Not a bomb, but you know,
well,
some info.
We were talking about all these musicians and bands that we have in common that we all seem to like. And I was like, oh, you guys probably like Ted Leo. This is a dumb way to.
It was more organic.
Yeah, I feel like I'm like trying to drop it now. No, but I met Ted Leo on the Joko Cruise, which is
what is that?
It's a comedy nerd cruise ship. Yeah, Jonathan Colton, he's a musician.
Okay.
So it's like a cruise ship that's chartered and it's for nerds of like comedy and podcasts and cool
people
nerdy musicians.
Keep trying to put nerds on the sea. I don't know proof.
No,
oh boy.
Nerds don't want to be on the sea.
These
was
nerds
John
do.
Hodgman a part of that?
He has been, but he didn't go this year. So I went and I met Ted Leo and I know him through Paul F. Tompkins, and of course I've been like a fan of his music, so I was super geeked out to be able to sing on stage with him because, you know, we do like little band setups and stuff. But he asked me and a handful of other people, including Paul and I don't know, a lady you might know named Amy Mann sing.
You might
on
have
his,
heard of her.
Right? Yeah, you might have heard of this. I don't know. She's done a couple records. but I was just so like honored because, as I said, I'd been such a fan of him for so long. And then like meeting him in this weird ocean nerd space, I was like, oh, that's probably where this friendship ends. But then he was like, no, I need like background singers for this thing. And so we all sang in this weird little spooky, we're the Lunar Choir on The Hanged Man, his new record.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've not heard that record yet. There was a big write-up
good.
On him, I think, in like the New Yorker or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that the New
Or New York Times or something?
I read it. I just don't remember the
Atlantic?
Publication. Atlantic?
Yeah, maybe. One of those. There's some like highfalutin Ted Leo piece.
Yeah.
And he's like he's been around forever.
Because
and, like,
he's highfalutin.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you into The Pharmacist? Is that your thing?
Yeah. I just like Ted's songwriting. So mm-hmm. whether he's playing with a full band or just him alone. Because I love punk, obviously, but he does what I think Langford does really well, which is he's not afraid of ballads and he's not afraid of like singing really beautifully. So his vocal stuff has always been really appealing to me.
Was there a local band in Vacaville that you were in or followed?
No, I wasn't. I was such a like musical theater nerd.
Oh, theater. Okay, I see.
I was just like singing Les Mis in my mom's Chevy Blazer.
You gonna see Hamilton?
I haven't seen it yet. No,
me neither. Like, I guess that's where our musical. I'm not actually. I don't like. Are you a musical guy, Paco?
No.
Like, into theatrical musicals.
No.
Also, Hamilton tickets are like what, $300?
Still,
they're like a lot. They're like kind of a lot.
Book of Mormon was good.
Yeah,
I did see that. That was fucking amazing. It's so funny. Those guys are geniuses.
It's really cool. Yeah, I think I don't know. I need my musicals a little less earnest. So Book of Mormon was good for that.
Yes. Yeah. Have you ever written a musical?
No, but we wrote, you know, we would write a lot for Second City, and I would always write music just because it came naturally to me. And now I'm very happy to be able to write songs that aren't also have to be funny.
Right. Yeah.
You guys on the new record, you guys all wrote songs?
Yeah, so lyrics? John, uh-huh. John is pretty much, he pretty much takes the lead, but this is the first time that he really came to us for not only like arrangement and sharing of the vote, but really like changing the melody and like, mm-hmm. so it was much more collaborative this time.
Right, more feedback. Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, he'd write a song that sits in his voice, but then it's like the song Mystery is a duet between Bethany and I, and, you know, it wasn't going to sit right in our voices, so we mm-hmm. had to kind of move the key and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
My and little weird name drop that I...
No, it's cool.
No, it's fine.
That's what these are for.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks for listening.
You can find more episodes of SupDoc, show notes, updates, and more... at supdocpodcast.com.
We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at supdocpodcast.
If you have comments, corrections, or want to suggest a documentary, email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.
The show is listener supported. You can donate to the show at patreon.com/supdocpodcast.
If you can't donate financially, please subscribe, comment, or tell a friend about SupDoc.
We'd like to thank Documentary News for their ongoing support.
SupDoc is produced by Will Scoville.
Our theme music is by David Siegel.